Amazon brings the UEFA Champions League.
Unbelievable!
With Tuesday's unmissable match.
Enchantingly wonderful!
World-class players.
Salah!
What a strike!
Incredible drama.
And Haaland!
History in the making.
Rice with take two!
The UEFA Champions League. It's on Prime.
Hello, sweater weather. Bring on cozy duvet days, crisp air and crunchy leaves. Out is out. And the original pumpkin spice latte is in. Handcrafted with our signature espresso and seasonal pumpkin flavors. Then topped with whipped cream, cinnamon and nutmeg. Hot or iced? PSL, it's here. Only at the Starbucks Coffee Company. Subject to availability while stocks last.
How you doing, Met fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi. The Mets have 2 weeks left to the regular season and are clinging to the third wildcard spot as we record this episode. And we'll go over all the latest news in just a bit with Newsday's beat writer for the New York Mets, Laura Albanese, and she's also an SNY analyst. And then we have a great look back at September 2015 with Terry Collins and Laura, reliving highlights of that month when the Mets won their last National League Eastern Division title on their way to their last World Series appearance. But first, we begin today's show with the loss of the entire baseball world suffered this past week with the passing of Davey Johnson, the former Mets manager who took them to their last World Series victory 39 years ago in 1986, passed away at his home this week in Florida at the age of 82. The tributes to Davey have been far and wide, and his contributions to the game date back to his playing days with the Baltimore Orioles. Ironically, Davey made the last out of the 1969 World Series, flying out to Cleon Jones, giving the Miracle Mets their first world championship. And all those years later, was part of their next and only other World Series title when he managed the club in 86. Many say he managed the Mets during their most successful era, leading the team from 1984 to 1990, and he went on to manage successfully for several other major league clubs. Let's take a look at Davey's career right now in this tribute video.
I knew we had all the pieces, and all I did was tell a guy in spring what I knew. We were just going to dominate, and no doubt about it.
It all came together in 1986 as the Amazons triumphed in an epic playoff run, culminating in the Fall Classic.
You know, it's never over till it's over. I think somebody said that. And this is what it's all about. This is what it's all worth sweating for.
Johnson would continue to find success as a big league manager, but was never able again to recapture the magic of 86. In the 1988 NLCS, the heavily favored Mets fell to the upstart Dodgers in a seven-game series. He would later manage the Reds, Orioles, Dodgers, and Nationals, finding regular season success followed by postseason disappointment.
Going back to the track, to the wall. And what happens here? He contends that a fan reaches up and touches it. Here comes Davey Johnson out to argue as Jeter comes across to tie the game.
Billy Martin, Dusty Baker, and Buck Showalter are the only skippers besides Johnson to manage four different clubs to the playoffs. Johnson was twice named Manager of the Year in 1997 while skippering the Orioles and 15 years later in 2012 with the Nationals. His .562 winning percentage is top 10 all-time among managers with at least 1,000 career victories. The baseball world mourns the passing of Davey Johnson.
I remember when Davey managed the club and was named manager in 1984. The cover of the Mets media guide that year was a drawing of Davey in front of a computer. He was known to use something called analytics back then, the beginning of the changes in baseball, and Johnson was at the forefront as a skipper, bringing the team he managed into a whole new way of managing a team. He was smart. He always had his players' backs. He was a fiery competitor, and his players fed off of that. Davey Johnson, a Mets Hall of Famer and a skipper worthy of a Cooperstown induction as well. He's somebody who's ranked 10th all-time of managers who have won at least 1,000 games. All the others have been elected into the Hall of Fame, and Davey Johnson deserves to be alongside them as well. All right, it's time for the leadoff, and as we head into the final few weeks of the regular season, let's bring on Mets beat writer for Newsday and SNY analyst Laura Albanese. Laura, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. I'm out here in Philadelphia. We got 3 more games against the Phillies here.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun to watch those games unfold with the Phillies as hot as they've become and Harrison Bader doing what he's doing. It's just been crazy. But you know what? I forgot something. Marsh, we have a sponsor for this segment, and I wanted to just say that the sponsor of this week's leadoff is brand new to us. So, Marsh, why don't you let us know who that sponsor is?
Oh. No, not my sworn enemy, Skyline Chili.
Well, I did reach out after, your adventure with them. And I said, listen, we do this leadoff and, you know, this is a good way to have Laura Albanese maybe turn the corner on your product. So they gave us a shot for a week. But anyway, I'm only kidding, by the way. Skyline Chili. Let's get into that first and foremost, because you are.
So what happened is that I remember watching Mets broadcasts and that infamous clip of Gary Cohen talking about Skyline Chili.
Yeah.
Years ago, where he's like, don't eat it. It's not good. And this was my first time in Cincinnati. So where does my brain go? Let me try the Skyline.
You were forewarned.
I knew what I was getting myself into. And yet it was worse than I thought it would be.
Well, before we even do that, I'm going to get your reaction. Because I had to pull the clip that you posted on your Instagram, including the discussion that took place on the Mets broadcast. So let's watch that together with our audience. And if you haven't seen it already, this is what happens when you don't take advice and you dive in anyway to Skyline Chili.
Okay, it is the moment we've all been waiting for. And by we all, I literally just mean me. Skyline. I got the classic three-way. I actually asked for onions, but they forgot, which is totally fine because it looks like there's a lot going on right now. So much cheese. All right, let's give it a shot. It's like gelatinous, and the sauce is sweet, but somehow also bitter, which I do not understand. And, fork sticks right in there. I feel a lot of emotions, like mostly confusion, like a little bit of, I want to say, like betrayal. And like intrigued, but not in a good way. I don't know why anyone would do this, but it made me feel an emotion, so I guess that makes Skyline Chili art. Don't eat this.
Have you got heartburn? It's a little lower than the heartburn.
Oh, there it is.
No. That's last year.
The vending machine burrito.
Oh, awful.
And the attendant face. Oh. That's about the same face that Laura Albanese had today when she tried Skyline Chili for the first time. Did you see the video?
I saw the video.
Yeah.
Thought that was a very similar look to what I imagined you looking like when you tried Skyline for the first time.
Well, I give Laura credit, because she's, you know, she's the Mets beat writer for Newsday, but she's also a bit of a culinary expert.
Nice.
And, yeah, it was hard seeing her subjected to that as Lindor reaches base for the fourth time today. But as I always say, you have to try everything once.
You have to try everything once, right?
That is true. I found that hilarious. And the fact that it made the Mets broadcast was even more hilarious. And what'd you think about it when you saw it actually on the broadcast?
So I didn't see it because I was covering the game, but I got a number of people texting me and they're like, Laura, you made the broadcast. I'm like, oh, you know, every once in a while they'll mention an article that I write or something like that. I'm like, oh, that's so nice. It's like for your Skyline chili review. And that just absolutely cracked me up. And I have been fielding comments from Gary and Howie Rose and a few other people be like, yeah, you sure did do that. So there we go. That was my very adventurous review of Skyline.
Yeah, I had an experience at Citi Field on the last road trip. I love egg rolls, right? And I know that Citi Field has these different egg rolls, and I was in the Clover Club with my nephew on his birthday, and I saw an egg roll in the display, and I was like, I'm gonna have one of those, because I thought it would be like a Philly cheesesteak type of thing or something inside. And I took a bite of it, and cinnamon and whatever the freak was in there. I almost had the look that you had, and I felt betrayed as well.
So I had that egg roll as well. I tried it and it was the Skyline chili egg roll, but I guess even though it was not good at all, it was not nearly as bad as the monstrosity that I was subjected to in Ohio.
Oh my goodness, man. At least you got to try everything once. But yeah, that was, you know, I can't recall in my lifetime. I mean, that reaction you had, I remember that my sister's husband's mom made this basil sauce. It was kind of a greenish, very Italian. And when I took a bite of it, it was like the most horrific thing I ever had. So, yeah. Don't try things you're not familiar with, I think. So.
Yeah, it's more like you expect one thing and you get the other. And you're just like, oh, well, this is jarring.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, well, let's talk a little baseball.
Let's do that.
Yeah. I watched, the Mets are in the middle of a road trip. They're in Philadelphia. That's where we're taping this. And I have to say, to start this off, even though there are three games left in the series beginning tonight, that last night's game was an ugly, ugly game. It just seemed like everything went wrong. The fundamentals weren't there. There were a lot of mistakes. And unfortunately, it really took away from the wonderful performance that we had from Nolan McLean.
I agree. I mean, and it's honestly back-to-back games with Brandon Sproat and Nolan McLean, and even Jonah Tong. Here you have these kids, and particularly with Tong, actually all three of them express not having their best stuff throughout these three starts and being able to adapt and improvise. And like yesterday in the early innings, you saw the Phillies being really aggressive in their at-bats. They were hunting McLean's sweeper because this is the second time that they see McLean. And what did he do? He adjusted, suddenly change up, curveball. You're seeing a lot more of the secondary pitches. And that is just so impressive because this is, again, a kid. This is a guy making only his fifth major league start. And the fact that he's able to stay that poised and be that mature on the mound against a lineup as potent as the Phillies, that really says something because it means that he can get himself out of trouble even when things aren't working his way. So you see these kids putting everything out there. They're taking all the work that they've done with player development in AAA in terms of pitch sequencing and in terms of just mental fortitude, in terms of maturity. And then the offense is not stepping up. We saw base running gaffes. I mean, I think in the Sproat game, you see Francisco Lindor get caught stealing twice. Once the third base, which seemed like an unnecessary sort of gamble there. Yesterday, you saw Brett Beatty getting picked off of first base. Maybe, you know, not some great defense in certain situations. But the biggest thing that stuck out to me is Aaron Nola comes into this game, and he has not been good all year. And over his last six starts, he has a 9.96 ERA. and he looks unhittable against the Mets.
I know.
And some of that is he was on. Some days you're just on. But then Nola comes out of the game, and the at-bats that you're seeing against the Phillies bullpen seem downright non-competitive. The Mets put the tying and the go-ahead runs on second and third with one out in the ninth inning against Duran. And Jeff McNeil's at-bat, that was a hard-fought at-bat. You know, he nearly gave the Mets a lead with a ball that went just foul down the line. But then Francisco Alvarez comes in with two outs, and he just swings wildly at three knuckle curveballs out of the zone because he was sitting fastball. And the one thing, you know, like the Mets are now 0-60 if they're trailing after the eighth inning.
I was going to bring that up. That's horrific. I mean, how do you win? How can you expect to go deep into a playoffs or a postseason if you can't fight like this team did last year and at least try to show some life in the latter part of a game? And the fact that they haven't won a game when they're trailing after eight is alarming.
It's actually one of the more alarming stats that I've seen because, you know, I mean, this team was known for its late game heroics last year and its ability to adapt to what opposing pitchers are trying to do to them. What we're seeing a lot now, pardon me, what we're seeing a lot now is that we're seeing some of those non-competitive at-bats. You're seeing a lot of first pitch swinging, even if it's not necessarily their pitch, especially in the latter innings. They're just getting overpowered or they're not stringing together certain at-bats. You know, you can have, I think Carlos Mendoza put it best, it's just inconsistency. You can have one guy, all right, like really working an at-bat, maybe he gets a little unlucky, he hits the ball hard directly at someone, but then the person right next to him, because he's pressing, it's just like these at-bats are getting behind in counts, and they're really taking themselves out of the game.
Yeah.
Welcome to Paris Pizzeria. Your blind date is already at the table, and there she is. Cousin Brenda, what are you doing here? You're married anyway.
Substitution brought to you by Paddy Power. Cousin Brenda makes way for Beth, the office crush.
Oh, get in! You might not always pick the right starter, but your sub can still deliver. Because with Paddy's Super Sub, your bet rolls over to the player coming on. Paddy Power.
Valid on selected leagues and markets only. Pre-match and in-play bets on qualifying player outcome selections only. T's and C's and exclusions apply. 18+. Gambleaware.org.
Where do you find a clear signal in a world of static? In a time of rapid change, cut through the noise. The Economist goes beyond the headlines to decode the forces shaping today and defining tomorrow. Get the full story. It's more than news. It's a trusted global perspective. The Economist. Know which way is up.
Yeah, it's been you know, really concerning to see. But it hasn't just happened yesterday. I mean, this road trip that you've been on, Cincinnati, and it's just kind of like this is not the time where your offense is supposed to kind of just shut down, especially with these young kids coming in, pitching their hearts out, and with all the other question marks about the other starters and the relief pitchers. At least the offense was something that was coming alive, and now it just seems like they've shut down again. And we don't have very many games. We got 18 games. And now you have four teams in back of you trying to get that third spot.
Yeah, so, and it's befuddling, and I think a lot of people have been confused by this Mets offense because of its firepower. They don't seem to get going all at the same time. And so what happens is that, you know, when you only have one or two guys going at one time, you're going to have rally killers interspersed throughout your lineup. You know, Cedric Mullins towards the end of the lineup has been an issue right now. He's on a 10-game hitless streak. And that's not really looking like a great trade deadline acquisition at the moment. No. Obviously, he doesn't want to be struggling. Asked me yesterday, you know, if he's feeling pressure. And he's like, maybe there is that pressure coming from a different team. Brett Beatty's been doing well. Francisco Alvarez, you just have to wonder, you know, with the broken pinky and the torn UCL. I have so much respect for this player for trying to play through all of this. And he says he doesn't feel pain, but how much could you really do that and not have it impact certain aspects of your game? It's definitely concerning because you can point at a few things here or there, but even if you point at a few things here or there, they should still have enough to produce runs, and they're just not doing it.
No, they're not. And Alvarez, you got to give him credit for trying to play through the pain, and obviously you need surgery when the season is over. The center field situation is another thing which has been when you say trade acquisitions, the deadline. The team that scares me most in back of the Mets is the Giants.
Right.
Because they've suddenly got very, very hot. And I pulled a clip, which I'm going to play right now, Marsh, because this was potentially a Mets answer in center field. But they traded him away for a rental reliever. So, Marsh, why don't we play what's going on in San Francisco right now with someone they've recently acquired from the New York Mets.
Take a look at Gilbert.
I don't even know how to explain that.
I mean, he's 100% energy. Well,
it's giving Jesse Winker energy.
I know. Not just, you know, his energy and his antics, but he's been performing. You know, he's contributed to the team. But it seems like once Drew Gilbert joined the Giants, and of course they got Jose Buto in that deal also, and didn't they get Casey as well?
So Buto's pitching well. Drew Gilbert's producing. And, you know, right now the Giants look like they won this. You know, like they made the deadline acquisitions necessary to get better. And it is kind of confounding because, you know, they were so cautious with Drew Gilbert in terms of bringing him up. But then now you're in a situation where you're like, okay, let's bring up Jonah Tong. Okay, let's bring up Nolan Clay. Okay, let's bring up Brandon Sproat. You know, you can never tell how prospects are going to pan out. I'm not necessarily what you could call a prospect hugger. But like if you had an answer in the outfield and you'd give him away.
Yeah. Yeah. It just has confounded me that the choices that they made, and of course, David Stearns is a brilliant guy and he's made incredible moves and the farm system and the player development staff, they're doing great things. But sometimes the energy of a player, the dynamic of a player coming in. And when I look at Philadelphia right now and I see Harrison Bader, who I thought was just fabulous on the team last year. He didn't perform very well in the latter part, but this guy is now hitting 600 against the Mets, and look what the energy he's brought to Philadelphia. So that guy was probably available. David Robertson was probably available. He had no place to go. And Gilbert, of course, with his energy, and combine that with the three young starters who they brought up, I think that at the end of the day, at the end of this season, when all is said and done, whether the Mets are in it or out of it, that those pieces sometimes add life to a team that can spark the entire team, like Iglesias did last year. So there's something about that personality infusion that sometimes helps bring teams over the top, and the Mets just didn't do that this year.
Yeah, and you know, like you can't really build a team for chemistry because chemistry is such a tricky thing to do. But there is a truth to energy. I mean, when Nolan McClain made his MLB debut, there was a special energy among the Mets because this kid put it all out there. When you talk about a guy like Iglesias, you know, like a guy like Harrison Bader, these guys also had really significant tools. Like a spectacular Harrison Bader catch in center field can definitely energize something. There was one point where it seemed like every time Iglesias got up to bat, he was getting an infield single. He was hustling it out. These are tangible things that help in the scorecard that also kind of translate into, okay, this is exciting. We can build off of this and we can do that. And while I don't know if that has as much value, if vibes, whatever you want to call it, has as much value early in the season, the thing is with the playoffs, as we've seen time and time again, it's not the best team oftentimes. It's the one that gets hot at the right time. So having players like that that can energize a team is really important. And I think what was equally as important is a guy like Iglesias, Bader, et cetera, they're veterans. So when they bring that energy, they can take the whole clubhouse with them, whereas the rookies still have to, as great as they are, they still have to take a little bit of a step back in terms of being leaders within the clubhouse because that's not their role, nor should it be.
Right, exactly. And now there's a lot of talk over the past 2 days about the potential starters if the Mets do get into that wild card spot. And those names that are being bannered around are Nolan and Brandon Sprout and Jonah Tong, possibly, all of which were not even in the major leagues 30 days ago. So what have you been hearing about the Mets considering these three young starters for a potential postseason rotation?
I think you'd have to be absolutely out of your mind to not have Nolan McLain pitching in the playoffs. Yeah. Brandon Sprout, I need to see a little bit more. Obviously, it's one start.
Yeah, the one start, right?
Right, but like, but even Jonah, and part of it is like these kids can give you length, which the other guys can't really do, save for David Peterson. I'm also, you know, and you look at. So one thing that David Stern said the other day is that they would be open to a piggyback situation. They have not begun to put together what would be their playoff pitching situation yet, or at least that's what they tell us. Who knows what's true? But a situation where, let's say, Sean Manaea starts and Clay Holmes piggybacks off of that, I think could be effective. Again, Clay Holmes, plenty of experience coming out of the bullpen. And Sean Manaea running into a wall second time around the lineup, maybe that's something that you can do there. You know, there are options, but it is, I don't want to say unfortunate, but it's a difficult situation going into the playoffs and saying, essentially, our hopes rely on these kids who have a combined 5, 6, 7, 8 major league starts underneath their belt. That is absurd in a lot of ways.
It is. It's kind of unheard of. I can't remember a situation where you have three rookies coming in and all of a sudden they could be considered for a postseason rotation. Maybe one, but never three.
Never. I've never heard of three. I mean, I saw something from Elias Sports Bureau, which is like, this is the first time in Mets franchise history that they had three pitchers go back to back to back with like fewer than four starts. Like one pitcher has fewer than four starts. So, I mean, we're literally looking at something historic. The fact that it is happening in September is amazing and good for these kids, but it's also, they're not going to be untouchable. And I think, you know, there's this expectation of like, well, you know, Nolan McLain, he's striking out all these people. He's the next Matt Harvey. That's too much pressure to put on someone. Nolan McLain needs to be Nolan McLain. Jonah Tong needs to be Jonah Tong. Brandon Sprout needs to be Brandon Sprout. It's a lot.
Even Tom Seaver got lit up in his rookie season, so you know it happens. It's just part of the game.
Yeah, you could end up having a Hall of Fame career, and you're going to get lit up at least some of the time.
That is exactly right. And I was going to ask you about the piggybacking situation, and you kind of answered that. That, you know, obviously under consideration, but when you look at now with the bullpen as well. It was surprising to see Mendoza use Ryan Helsley in that spot in the opening game of the Phillies series, a very high leverage spot.
Right.
And immediately I noticed about him, because I've been seeing tapes, that his pitching delivery, his arms are a little bit higher, and he stayed away from the fastball. Didn't he throw like 12 sliders in a row? And they're doing everything they can to fix him. So what is your assessment, and what did you see about his performance? And maybe there's a little light at the end of the tunnel because the Mets desperately need him.
Look, Helsley's talent didn't just disappear. But I was surprised to see him there because only 2 days ago, Mendoza said they were looking for lower leverage situations to use him in. And that felt like one of the highest level of leverage situations you could have thrown Ryan Helsley into. But it could be that speaking to this pitcher who made a career out of high leverage situations, could have felt more comfortable and or, you know, implied outright, whatever. One of the issues is that they believed he was tipping pitches. So, and when you only have like the slider and the fastball, okay, like you're going to. It's possible that kind of what he's doing right now is in an effort to get out of his own head in terms of, because it's not, when you're tipping pitches, at least from what pitchers tell me, it's not just, oh, let me not do this glove motion anymore, because then they're going to know that the slider is coming. It's more like you can get into your own head so much. Am I doing the glove motion? Am I not doing the glove motion? Suddenly you're second guessing yourself. And guess what? Whether you tipped or whether you didn't, you just threw 99 miles per hour right down the gullet, and major league hitters can hit that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a bit of an amalgamation. You know, I've seen him in the clubhouse talking to Brooke Schraley a lot. I know he's working with Jeremy Hefner a lot. So he does have a support system around him. There's a lot of smart guys in there. And maybe, you know, putting him in that situation had to have been a little bit of a confidence boost. Oh, and yeah. Like, confidence goes a long way. How many times have we heard pitchers get the yips? And it was, I remember Luis Severino famously when he was at the Yankees, when he just couldn't get anybody out. I was just like, it just is what it is. It's just like, he essentially said, it's in my head.
Yeah.
It's a real
thing. Another factor might have been that he put him in this situation at a road game rather than, you know, being booed coming out of the bullpen at Citi Field. You know, the fans want to cheer him, but, you know, obviously he hasn't performed. So maybe that was another reason. We hope he turns the corner on it because the Mets really need him, as I mentioned. When you get to the injury situation for the Mets right now, two of their best defenders are on the IL. When you're talking about Tyrone Taylor and Luis Torrens, both of them, these are not long-term, are they? I mean, are they both expected back fairly soon?
So Torrens, for now, is expected back basically at the minimum of the 10 days. The decision, he had actually played through this injury earlier in the season, but the decision to put him on the IL now is because you can't have two catchers who are banged up. Torrens is like, I extended my arm to try to throw, and it was too painful. And then you have Alvarez, which, you know, even though he says, again, that he's in no pain, the Mets are taking it day by day. So there could be a day where he wakes up and he's not doing well. Suddenly you have Torrens that can't throw. What are you going to do?
And then what do you do? I mean, you bring up who's the other catcher that just got promoted to AAA? It was a high draft pick a few years ago.
That I don't remember. But no, you have Hayden Senger. Hey, you know what? Jeff McNeil has said that he wants to play catcher. So that, I think that would actually be your emergency.
Really?
Yeah. He wants to play all nine positions. At one point, and he's only missing catcher.
I can't envision Jeff.
Me neither. He's kind of a slider guy.
Yes.
But wow. You know, like I
can imagine if like he gets a call from the umpire that he's not happy with. You know.
Oh my goodness.
That could be a little volatile.
But it's like when the Zamboni driver has to come in and play goal. It's just like, what are you doing? But you know that. There have been players that are just like super, super emergency backup catchers, but you never want to be in that situation.
No. No, especially this time of year.
Right.
Also, I mean, this is the crunch time now. Other injury updates, Jose Siri looks like he's ready to come back now.
He's going to need, he's going to need a little bit of time, but it looks like he's progressing. So he's going to be, he's great in the outfield. It's going to be a little bit of a glut out there. Yeah. But that being said, with the way that Cedric Mullins is playing,
Yeah, that's an easy decision.
Yeah, so, Mullins' defense is as advertised. He has good range. He gets to balls, but his arm is still probably not at the elite level, definitely not at the elite level of a Tyrone Taylor, who was unfortunately also heating up at the plate when he got hurt.
Yeah, he was.
It was just terrible timing because if you can play Tyrone Taylor in the outfield and he's hitting, you play him every chance that you get. Because, Juan Soto does not have the range, and Soto has very explicitly said, Tyrone takes balls away from me, and I am fine with that. That is okay. and Brandon Nimmo is in an average to very slightly below average in the outfield, according to, the baseball savant and whatnot. Tyrone probably saved the Mets more runs than people even know.
No, I agree with that. Soto is another story. I mean, he looks like he's dead set now on he's going to be 30-30 unless something, something bad happens. But there's an outside shot, I think, of maybe even 40-30.
Because what is he up to, 37 home runs?
Yeah, he's close.
Yeah, and he's only one stolen base away from 30 stolen bases. So that's some pretty elite company. I checked it the other day. I believe there's only been 15 players in Major League Baseball with 30 stolen bases and 40 home runs. I mean, this is a guy who, quote unquote, started off super slow and was obviously a bust, which is hilarious.
I think that's been the most fun part of this year for him was just the stolen bases in his running game. And he seems to be enjoying that as much as he's hitting home runs every time he steals a base, which is kind of crazy to see.
It's actually, it's very in line with his character. Like when you see him kind of be jokey, he has the Soto shuffle. He does have a very playful nature. Even though he's a very serious baseball player, he has a playful nature when he's on the field. And it absolutely translates to his base stealing, which is patently hilarious because he just takes these very kind of like slow walks away and he knows what the pitcher is doing, what the pitcher isn't doing. And all of a sudden he's in like the 27th percentile sprint speed. This is not a fast man. All of a sudden he's on second base.
Yeah. Easily. Most times.
Sometimes like they're not throwing. Sometimes everyone's like, what's going on? And I'm like, he's done it 29 times, guys. You're not expecting this.
Yeah. So it's been fun to see that part of his game evolve. And the Mets now, you know, I think the league is starting to catch on to what's going on with the base running because they've been picked off more now than they have been over the course of the season. So I think they really should use this this strategically rather than just like I can run and I can steal. So I'm going to do it regardless of the situation. So they really have to reel that in, I think.
Yeah, you can't be making outs on the base paths. And the thing was, like, when I was looking at the Mets base running, they were far above average in base running only because of the stolen bases. But in terms of taking extra bases, they were far below average. So if you start losing the stolen the ability to take judicious steals as opposed to just going for broke every time, that's going to start becoming a liability because the other part of their base running is not strong.
Yeah. Well, you know, for Met fans, we're hoping that there is a postseason. You know, we go through this every year in a different way, it seems. But anyway, you know, I'm not really that big of a football fan, but I have been watching the HBO documentary series about the Buffalo Bills.
And, oh, yeah.
I am a Bills fan when it comes to football. Terry Pegula was my boss at one time, and I worked for the family here in Nashville, and Terry and Kim, and even got to know Jesse Pegula, who unfortunately didn't get to the finals at the U.S. Open. But
I was convinced that if Jessica Pegula had won, the Bills were definitely going to win the Super Bowl this year.
I know, right? She's been working so hard. I knew her when she was a kid. I mean, I worked for the family starting in 2010, and I worked with them until the mid-2013 because they had the record company here in town that I was VP for. But got to know that family. What a fabulous family they are. And I've always rooted for the Bills since they bought the team. And the documentary has really been eye-opening for me to see the inside because I had never watched one of those things before. So I'm hoping that the Bills go all the way. But I'm hoping that that doesn't happen as far as me watching football, that the Mets go deep into this postseason. And I'm kind of like, have some anxiety.
Well, at least you got that incredible Bills-Ravens game on Sunday, which is one of the better football games I have.
Oh, yeah. That was fabulous. What a way to start the season.
So
amazing. Well, I always appreciate your time with us, Laura. And I do have to say before we close that I enjoyed your article on Davey Johnson this past weekend. I know there were a lot of comments from various places that you got them, but Davey was such a special person. And I remember him fondly from back then. And just the fact that he's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame, I think he's, in that top 10 of managers with winning percentages, winning over 1,000 games, the only one who's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But he was so impactful for the Mets, and it was a great article, as everything that you do is in Newsday. I really enjoy reading your stuff, and please let everybody know where they can find you, where they can read about you, and your podcast as well.
Yeah, thank you so much. So you can follow me on X at Albanese Laura, on Instagram at Laura Write Stuff. Read my work at newsday.com/Mets. And my podcast is First Time Listener, Long Time Caller. It's sports, pop culture, and nonsense. We got an episode coming out. We talk a lot about the Bills. So,
oh, cool. I'll check it out. All right, Laura Albanese, thank you so much for your time. And we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you so much.
Always great to have Laura Albanese with us, and she gives great insights. This is on the road. She just got to watch out to where she eats some of her cuisine. Let's talk about our friends over at Tunnel of Towers, our presenting sponsors here at the show. It's one of the most talked about 5K races in the country. Sunday, September 28th, the Tunnel of Towers Foundation will hold its 24th annual run walk through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel and into Lower Manhattan. Participants will see banners with the names and faces of the 343 FDNY firefighters killed on 9/11. It's an unforgettable experience. After the run, there's a family barbecue and a free concert with country music star Chris Jansen. Sign up at t2t.org. There are a limited number of spaces available. Terry Collins will be running that for the second year in a row. So once again, if you want to run this race, and it's been going on for 24 years now, just go to t2t.org. This is just one of dozens of Tunnel the Towers run walks this fall around the New York area. Across the country, you could find a T2T 5K from the Jersey Shore to Bridgeport, Connecticut, to North Idaho, to Huntington Beach, California, and places in between. You can look for a foundation event near you. Just go to the website. Check the calendar out at t2t.org. And last month, Tunnel the Towers Foundation held a grand opening for its newest Veterans Village. The facility outside Atlanta will provide permanent housing for nearly 100 previously homeless veterans. The village also includes a full array of supportive services. This is one of more than a dozen Tunnel to Towers projects across the country aiming to eradicate veteran homelessness. You can learn more about the foundation's homeless veteran program at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. If you can, please donate $11 a month, and we will return with Tears of Joy, remembering September 2015 with Terry Collins and Laura Albanese right after this from our friends at T2T.
My name is Lisa Tuzzolo. I am the wife of NYPD Sergeant Al Tuzzolo, who was killed in the line of duty on November 4th, 2016. I think there are many reasons why it's important to give back to Tunnel to Towers. They've given me financial support to move forward and the ability to be home with my children and not worry about how the next bill is going to be paid. Tunnel to Towers. Let us do good.
There are some things you'll never understand. Like, why did that person ghost me? When did manspreading become socially acceptable? And how come that dinosaur theme park keeps reopening, given its safety record? But some things you can understand. Like your Experian credit score. The more you improve your score, the more you could save on things like credit cards, car loans, mobile contracts, and more. It's dead easy to check and completely free. Download the Experian app and check your score today.
If you haven't tried Abercrombie denim yet, you're missing out. Denim should fit like this. It's all about proportions. Abercrombie has their classic fits and athletic fits for guys who want a little more room in the thigh. When you find your staple fit, it'll be the pair you reach for day after day for every plan. Shop Abercrombie denim in the app, online, and in store.
Each and every month of this season, we've been looking back at the 10-year anniversary of the 2015 New York Mets, a team that made it to the World Series, the last Mets team that made it to the World Series. And today we're going to reminisce a little bit about September of 2015, and we welcome Laura Albanese. Laura, welcome to look back at Tears of Joy.
Sounds good. That was a fun month.
It was a great month, Laura.
It was a great month. You were just getting started, really, as far as I know. You started with Newsday, and I believe Hank Winicky was the guy that brought you in years ago.
Yeah, he did. That was my first. That was my first full season covering baseball. So I had done spring training, and I kind of just floated right in the middle of 2015. And hey, talk about good timing, right?
No, that was great timing. And Terry, of course, that month in particular was a march to the clinch, to clinching the playoff, to get into the playoffs and win the National League East for the first time. What stood out to you, Terry, as you were heading into September after a fabulous August after the trade deadline?
Well, yeah, John, I mean, the thing I remember most is the absolute focus that all the players had. After we came out of August and we had moved into first place and we'd gotten built up ourselves a little lead, the determination and the focus on these guys, I'm telling you, there was not a game that we started until we clinched that we thought we were going to lose. I mean, I don't care what the score was at any part of the game. We had firepower. We had pitching. We caught the baseball. So these guys said, we're going to win today's game. And the confidence, and, you know, I used to look back many, many, many years ago, back when the Yankees won the 116 games that one year. We played them late in the season. And when they walked on the field, you saw the confidence in them. Just the way they carried themselves. And I saw that in our team in 2015.
Yeah, I think what was interesting to me, I mean, having grown up in New York, I had been exposed to the Mets, especially in September, for many, many years. And whether you like it or not, they had had a history of September collapses. There was 1998. It almost got away in 1999. It happened again in 2007, again in 2008. And so this was a fan base that was a little bit snake-bitten in terms of, oh, no, what's going to happen now? But this team did not feel like those teams. This team, like Terry said, felt like they came in every day, and it was like winning was assumed. And if you lost, it was almost surprising. There was also just a sense of excitement around it, from the emotionality of Wilmer Flores' trade that wasn't, and then him coming back and hitting a home run. And then Yoenis Cespedes bringing such a jolt to the team. And of course, Matt Harvey and Jacob deGrom. This was a point where it felt like, I think for the first time in a long time, it felt like a little bit like a Met City, because it was such an interesting and intriguing team that looked like it was built to go all the way.
I totally agree. And there are some great games during that month of September. One was a unbelievable comeback against the Washington Nationals that took place on September the 8th, and we have a video of that comeback that we'd like to play and get everybody's, get yours and Laura's comments on the other side of this video. Washington against New York and the Mets' unbelievable comeback that day.
A game they'll be talking about for a long time in New York and Washington. Matt Harvey in the midst of this innings controversy, but he does himself no favors in the bottom of the first, facing Clint Robinson with two on and two down.
And he pulls one through the shift of base hit. Rendon around third. He'll come home with the first run of the game. Clint Robinson with an RBI single, and the Nats lead 1-0. And he goes after the first pitch and has a base hit. That chases home Escobar with the second run of the inning. An RBI single for Ian Desmond, and the Nats are up 2-0. Here's Ian Desmond. Will he be bunting? He just had a chat with the third base coach, Bob Henley. First pitch, he squares, he bunts hard, back to the mound. Harvey bobbles the ball, goes to third anyway, way too late, and the bases are loaded. Harvey sets. Here's the 0-1. Fastball line to center, base hit. Escobar scores. Robinson to third, the ball overrun by Cespedes. It goes all the way to the wall. Everybody might score. Robinson's in, Desmond's in. Around third, digging for the play. Taylor, he will score standing. Four runs come home, and it is 7-1 Nationals here in the sixth inning.
Base is loaded, two out. Mets down by five in the seventh. 3-1 to Granderson. And it's outside, ball four. It forces in a run, and it'll bring Cespedes to the plate as the tying run. Bases loaded, two out. Mets have two runs home in the seventh. Cespedes the tying run at the plate. The Mets down 7-3. Facing Drew Storey. Cespedes drills one down the line. That'll go to the corner. Flores is in. Uribe right behind him. Here comes Granderson. The relay throw to the plate. Not in time. A three-run double for Yoenis Cespedes. The Mets have scored five runs in the seventh. This is now a one-run ball game. Now Storen has walked the next two hitters. 3-0 coming to Duden. And he walked him to force in the tying run. The sixth walk of the inning issued by the Nationals bullpen brings home the sixth run of the inning as Cespedes scores to tie the game at 7. 2-1 to Darno. And Travis rifles one to right center field, overcomes Harper, and he makes the running catch to end the inning.
Sean Neuenhuis batting 207 with three homers, going up against the veteran right-hander Jonathan Papelbon. The 1-0 pitch. into the air to deep right center. This baby's going. It is going. It is gone. Holy smokes. Kirk Nieuwenhuis has given the Mets the lead. This place is in shock. And frankly, so is this booth. It is 8-7 New York.
Jerry's Familia, who comes into the save.
And the most delicate of ones.
Anthony Rendon is 2-for-4 tonight. You think he's still going to be bunting 3-1?
No.
Can't. And he bunts it hard down to Duda. Has a play at second. Gets the out. No relay. And the Mets pick off the lead runner. The bunt is unsuccessful. Brings to the plate Junel Escobar, who already has 3 hits tonight. Familia ahead of him 0-2. Bouncing ball. Wright's got it. To second for one. Murphy to first. Double play and the ball game is over.
Mets earn the stunning 8-7 comeback win to increase their lead over the Nationals to 6 games in the NL East. Kirk Nieuwenhuis's pinch hit home run, his first long ball since July 12th, when he hit 3 homers against Arizona. Matt Harvey tied a career high with 7 runs allowed, but held Bryce Harper hitless in 3 at-bats. Harper is now 0-for-20 in his career against Harvey.
Wow.
Kirk Nieuwenhuis had such a fascinating Mets career.
He did. You know, I'm going to tell you, when that ball left his bat, that dugout erupted. We knew it was gone. And, you know, against Papelbon, you know, it wasn't everybody's favorite guy to face. And so to have that happen, but the comeback itself, the big hits that we got along the way, it was, and again, that's why I say when we won that game and the next day, I mean, we put that poor Drew Storen, and we put him in, you know, this kid was so, his arms were shaking when he would face us after we came back in that game. So it was a tremendous game for us. And that's just the way that we take the field, and you said, look, no lead safer if the other team has it. So we were just on a roll and kept it going.
Yeah, and I can't imagine how demoralizing it must be. You know, that ball gets by Cespedes, and you're like, okay, now we've got this huge deficit. The vision is on the line. All these things are happening. But the fact that there seemed to be absolutely no panic in that inning when they strung together those hits, just the quality at bats, taking walks, being patient, and being able to kind of grind out these things to open the door for the big knock, it was just a sign of a very mature ball club and kind of a testament to what you guys were able to put together that year.
You know, Laura, when you think about 6 walks in one inning, it just tells you the discipline the players had. Yeah. Look, there was no panic. Let's get a good ball to hit. Keep the and walk 6 times in one inning. That was unbelievable.
Yeah. And it reminds me a little bit about some of the struggles that are facing this year's Mets team, where, you know, sometimes it does feel like they're pushing a little bit in those situations, and then they get behind in counts, and then they start chasing. And you see the value of having, again, that plate discipline, the maturity, and the ability to wait for your pitch and then do damage with it.
Why do your socials look so good? Mine are basic.
I use Adobe Express. Free templates and AI features make stories, reels and posts so easy.
That's exactly what my feed needs.
Adobe Express, the quick and easy create anything app. Free.
Well, the Mets certainly kept rolling in September, and in Cincinnati, it was the opportunity to clinch their first NL Division championship since 2006. Big day. I remember being there myself, driving from Nashville to Cincinnati for that series, and it was remarkable. So we have a video of that, and then we'll get both of your thoughts on the other side of what was an amazing day in Mets history.
Mets enter Saturday's game knowing a win or a Nationals loss would make them the National League East champions. Matt Harvey, David Wright getting loose before the game. A lot of Mets fans in Cincinnati. They want to see their team win its first division title since 2006. Lucas Duda stepped up in the first with the bases loaded to meet John Lamb.
Lucas drives one deep right field. That ball is gone! A grand slam for Lucas Duda! The suddenly raging hot Lucas Duda gives the Mets the early 4-0 lead.
The Mets seeking champagne and off to a fast start. Off pitch to Granderson, swing and a high fly ball deep to right. It's going, and there it goes, a home run for Curtis Granderson. Number 25 on the air for Granderson, and the Mets have a 5-0 lead.
Now Michael Dyer will bat.
Swing and a high drive, left center field. That one's headed for the alley. That ball is off the base of the fence in left center. Murphy around third, he scores. Here comes Duda. Relay throw to the plate, not in time. Duda safe. Kadire goes to third, and the Mets lead 7-2. Daniel Murphy leading off the fifth inning. Murphy out to center field. We'll drop back to the warning track, back at the wall, leaping, and he made the catch. Terrific play by Jason Bourgeois. Here's the pitch to Phillips, swinging a ground ball up the middle. Flores picks it, backhand flip to second. Juan Murphy to first, double play. That is as spectacular a double play as you will ever see.
Seventh pitch coming to Duvall. Struck him out. Six strikeouts for Matt Harvey. Kadire froze a moment, now comes rushing in. Oh, caught it. Flores caught it.
Jeez, what a play by Flores.
Matt Harvey's thrown 97 pitches over 6 2/3 innings. And he has a big smile on his face this time, not the scowl that he left with against the Yankees.
Party's already begun in the lower level seats behind third. 2-1 pitch. Swinging a high fly ball, hit to deep left center. Bourgeois back at the track at the wall. It is gone! David Wright with a three-run home run. Perhaps as fitting a hit as the Mets have had all year. David Wright punctuates what has been a magical afternoon and a fairy tale season.
And for the manager, Terry Collins, 66 years, 40 years in baseball, been waiting for this moment his entire life. And it is right there now for the taking as they wheel the champagne into the clubhouse. Get ready for the party that's about to ensue. 0-2 to Jay Bruce.
He struck him out! Tears of joy for the 2015 New York Mets, National League Eastern Division champions!
The Mets, National League East champions for the first time since 2006 as they take it 10-2. It's the sixth division title in franchise history. Mets also win a franchise record 10th consecutive road game. Matt Harvey in the victory struck out six. He allowed two earned runs over 6 2/3. Lucas Duda and Curtis Granderson each hit their 25th home runs of the season.
Terry?
Yeah, well, obviously, I will tell you, when we, in the ninth inning, I took a step back. Everybody, you know, we had the big lead and everybody was against the fence, and I took a step back. And I just looked down the row of the guys and I said, you know, this can't happen to a better bunch of people who, you know, just as you heard the announcer, 10 road games in a row we won. And that's why I'm saying the endurance, the concentration, the focus, the preparation these guys had, you know, they deserve that moment. And it was a long time coming, you know, that, and he was wrong. When I was 66, I'd been in the game 45 years. So that was and again, it was one of the greatest moments of my career, except for that walking out on that third baseline in the World Series. But, you know, those guys, they, and again, you look at, and you know, another big hit for David. You know, and the name, one of the names that goes unmentioned a lot is Lucas Duda. I mean, Lucas Duda hit some huge home runs against Washington in Weird City Field and big home runs. And then to start the game with a grand slam in the first inning, he just set the tone for it. And, you know, as we've all said many times, it was a total team effort from you know, April till October 1st.
Yeah, I often think about Lucas Duda. You know, it was unfortunate that sometimes he gets remembered for a mistake that he made in the World Series when, in reality, one of the biggest reasons you got that far is because Lucas Duda was there. And he did come up with so many clutch hits down the stretch. And just from a narrative perspective, from a human perspective, seeing you being able to celebrate, seeing David Wright being able to celebrate after it had been so long, that just had to be such a fantastic feeling, knowing, okay, we all got together, you all went in the same direction, we're able to accomplish this huge goal. And, you know, it's a shame that David's career did not extend far enough that he couldn't get to do that a little bit more often. But it's great that he was able to do it then, especially when he had worked so hard to get back on the field.
And I'll tell you what, John, one of the things that video just showed right there, you know, when it was pretty amazing. You know, everybody kept telling me Wilmer Flores couldn't play shortstop. How about the two plays he made? Holy cow. I know a lot of shortstops can't make those plays. So it was fun to see those and remember them.
I still get a smile on my face when I see I'm like, Wilmer Flores not only is still in the game, he's put together a very nice career.
Heck, he sure has. He's having a heck of a year, too. So.
He really is.
Yeah. 10 years now in the game. So that's a credit to him. And he's so beloved. I mean, Wilmer, no matter where he is, I mean, he's got that personality. And I heard him, he was with Jay Horowitz on Jay's show last week. And he's still so humble. And he's just such an incredibly nice person. And you only wish him the very best in anything he does. And we still miss him here in New York. We really do.
He still gets cheered.
He does.
You know, all these years later, when he comes, he still gets cheered.
You know, what you just described, John, is what fans want to see out of major league players. The humility, you know, the fact that they're good players, but they respect the fan base. They respect who they are. They love the game. They love to play, but they're not bigger than the next guy. And that's why he's beloved.
Yes. Like David Wright. Beloved and not bigger than the next guy, just a leader. Laura, you're this was a kind of a new experience for you covering even a postseason team. So I bet you thought it was going to happen every year.
I mean, that's basically what they told me. They're like, well, you know, this is going to. I was like, sign me up. This is great. Yeah, I never have to sleep again. Yeah. It was good.
We had to get that pitching together, Laura. Would have happened a lot more. So
but it was still. It was an eye-opening experience. It was a really educational experience. But just from a storytelling perspective and being around a lot of veterans, both on the reporting side and on the playing side, and just seeing how business is conducted, I think was instructional. And honestly, it helped shape my career. So for that, I'm very thankful.
Yeah, these seasons like 2015 and last year for the New York Mets, those are magical seasons. There's something about them that will never be forgotten by the fan base. And Terry, I mean, to give you every bit of credit in the world to handle that staff and to be there and to have your career as long as it had been, to have that experience in 2015 and have the last Mets team to go to the World Series, it'll never be forgotten. And I'm so happy and grateful that we're able to even discuss 2015 here on this program. So it's been great reminiscing.
Yeah, it's been great, John. Thank you. Laura, thanks for everything. Appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you. This was fun.
All righty. Thank you both. And we'll be back in our next episode, actually next month, just to talk about the playoffs and the postseason of 2015. So we look forward to you joining us at that time. A great look back at one of the most special months in Mets history, September 2015. And we'll have a look back at the Mets postseason from 10 years ago next month. And now, we debut a new Tunnel to Towers story featuring TNA wrestler Steve McClain. Here it is now.
My name is Steven Kubrick. I wrestle as Steve Macklin in TNA. My character that I portray is a clash between Captain America and the Punisher. Get to be a big kid in my underwear every day. So I grew up in Rutherford, New Jersey, which is right outside the city, and Skyline is right there. And then 9/11 happened. That morning, you could just see outside of our window, just the smoke still billowing from where the towers were. We felt attacked. And I think at that moment, I think I made my choice knowing the route that I needed to go. I was in the United States Marine Corps 4 years. Both my deployments were to Afghanistan. Adapting back to civilian life, I've watched as a lot of my friends have struggled, whether it's drugs, suicide, and then life outside of the military, and not being able to find something like I did with wrestling, attaching yourself to something that's very similar to what the Marine Corps was. The guys that you serve with, to me, have always been the guys that I go to if I have a problem. We were in the trenches together, and like we learned that together, and we fought that together, and now we're coming back, and they're the only ones I can relate to that. We just keep in touch. T2T is helping thousands of veterans, and the number just keeps growing. And the $11 a month that you see on those ads, it goes a long way. For a homeless vet to have the resources where they're at and for Tunnels to Towers to do that, it helps veterans get back to real life and civilian life, whether it's smart homes, helping out with mortgages, or just getting back to normal life with recovery and becoming back to civilian world. It's good to know that people care. Americans shouldn't stand for their heroes sleeping on the streets. Across this great country, there are thousands of veterans with no place to call home. They deserve better. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is committed to eradicating veteran homelessness by providing housing and critical services. So please help by donating $11 a month at t2t.org. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Let us do good.
Another great story from our friends at Tunnel to Towers. On our next show, we'll have all the highlights of this year's Alumni Classic and focus in on the final week of the regular season with Terry Collins and some special guests. But before we say goodbye for this week, we'd like to remind you to check out Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. Each week, Jay brings on guests from all eras in Mets history. Conversations with Jay Horowitz is available on all podcast platforms or on YouTube. We invite you to subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on your favorite podcast platform or on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/the Terry Collins Show. Our entire archives of the past two seasons are available on either the podcast platform you listen on or on the YouTube channel. And we also feature clips and highlights of each one of the shows. That'll wrap up another edition of the Terry Collins Show. Thanks to our creative director, Marsh, and to our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time.
At Betway, we've signed Thierry Henry to kickstart our season. Come and join Betway today and get up to £30 match-free bet if your first acca loses. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Bet the responsible way. Gambleaware.org.